Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it.
Are you having a hard time finding great investment properties? Unfortunately, the best deals are rarely found locally. Successful investing begins with the right properties in the right markets. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best deals across the U.S. Our simple, proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly cash flow. Get your free copy of The Ultimate Guide to Passive Real Estate Investing at noradarealestate.com/guide. That's N-O-R-A-D-A realestate.com/guide.
Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer, and I'm excited for another hump day hustle. With me is John Stiles. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing great, Todd. Thanks again for having me on your show.
What's
the latest with you, Todd? I know you've recently been working on some different apartment deals. How are those going?
Yeah, so right now I've got an 84 unit that we're getting ready to close on in next week. And it's in Lexington, Kentucky, 84 units. So it's a pretty decent value add. We're going to be putting about $8,500 per unit into the building. And that's not just in the unit specific, but I break it down per unit just so it's easy to understand. But so we're buying that in the upper 20s a unit. We're going to be sticking, that $8,500 a unit. Some of the stuff that we're doing exterior-wise, we're doing a bunch of windows. I think it's – so they've done some windows. They did all the upper-level windows. It's a three-story buildings. But we have about, I think it's like 278, I think it is, windows left to do. So quite a few windows, got some doors to do. We're going to replace all the front entry doors, and then a bunch of new lighting. And we're going to put in LED lighting to help with that efficiency. And then also we're going to add a playground. There's really no amenities for the tenants at all. So we're going to add a playground, and we're also going to add a couple soccer nets and kind of just brighten up overall the landscaping outside, help make it look a lot nicer. And then the other thing that we're going to do too is there's a laundry facility. We're going to brighten that up, clean that up, make that more inviting. And then there's an extra storage area in the laundry facility, and we're going to turn that into an office space. Because right now the office is actually eliminating one of the units. Okay. And so right now it's really an 83 unit because one of them is an office space. Well, that cuts into our income, and that takes away $725 a month. Just to have that office space there. So we're going to add a new office space in the laundry facility building, which should be nice too, because that's more centrally located as well. And so then in the interior, everything's just outdated. It's a 1970 built building. Everything's, kitchens are 1970s, bathrooms are 1970s. So we're doing new kitchens, new baths. We'll do luxury vinyl planking for the flooring and just clean it up and make it a little nicer on the inside. Common areas, we'll put in all LED lighting, clean those areas up and really brighten the place up. So I'm excited for the project definitely to start taking shape.
Wow. So with all of these renovations and repairs, are you dealing with one main contractor who's subbing out all the rest? Or are you going with a lot of different vendors, and are you coordinating it yourself, or is you going through your property manager?
Yeah, good question. So this is an out-of-state deal, and so I am coordinating it with the property manager, and so the property manager is going to be handling the contractors, and I will be handling both the property manager and contractors, but for the most part, the property manager is the day-to-day. We'll have on-site there as well. So that'll help. So they've got their whole team that's going to be in place to help get the project done. Now, if this was an in-state deal, I would be handling more of the of the day-to-day operations, but being out of state is just no good way to do it. I mean, I can communicate with the contractor definitely, and I still will, but it's just too challenging if I try to handle it myself, and you know, the property management has to be comfortable hands-on. So that was one of the criteria when I'm looking at property management, is finding a manager that has done these types of value add heavy lifting deals. And that, yep. So that was one of the very most important criteria when you're looking at, you know, who you're going to have as part of your team.
Yeah. Cause that's a pretty big value add. Excuse me. What was that? $714,000 in renovations?
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be, well, it's going to be $700,000. So yeah, okay. Just under 85 a unit.
Are all those bids coming in pretty close to what you originally estimated or?
Yep. Yep. Well, when I walked through it, so the good thing is, Kentucky labor and everything's a little cheaper than Minnesota. And so it's nice for me because I can walk through a building and I can go, okay, this is going to cost about $800,000. And I get the bids back and it's like, oh, wow, it's not going to be costing me quite that much. And so it's nice when you're going into a market that the labor is a little bit cheaper. I think it would be a struggle if it was the opposite way.
Yeah.
But this works out pretty well. So.
Cool. Well, that's exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it'll be a fun deal. We did a syndication, so we raised the down payment. It was a small deal. It was only about $800,000 that we needed to raise. So that went really well. Investors are really excited to get the deal going, and I'm excited to get the deal going. So I think it'll take us about 12 months to do the whole renovation and stabilization on the property. And then from there, we'll likely do a refinance, maybe pull a little bit of capital out, but make sure we're maintaining really good, loan to value. I don't want to be over leveraging it because of the market cycle that we're in. I like to be really conservative where we're at. So, I think, you know, that should take place, probably about close to 18 months into the deal where we'll refi and we should have everything stable and running really smooth. So excited for this deal to get going and get done. Excited to hopefully get another one under contract. So it's a competitive market out there.
Yeah.
It's definitely challenging all around, single family, multifamily, commercial, whatever you're looking at. It's just challenging. I mean, there's a lot of capital chasing yield right now. A lot of people sat on the sidelines when the market was down. And a lot of those good deals have been scooped up now, were really good deals with a lot of meat on their bone. And so now it's a lot of capital chasing yield. So you got to be careful that you don't get too over anxious just to chase a deal, just to get a deal. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm really diligent at not doing. So.
Very good.
I got a story that reminds me now. I have somebody that asked me the other day about an investment. It was a syndication deal, and the investor likely had performed really well, but they were doing all their deals during the Great Recession. So they started in, I can't remember what it was, maybe 2009 or 10. And likely they had done really well because they were buying in New York and they were buying decent properties and they were probably getting them for good deals. And so they were able to perform on them. But this was a deal that these guys were telling their investors are going to make 20% return on their investment, annualized return on their investment, which is, you know, pretty good. But the problem with what they were doing is they were not leveraging the property whatsoever. Well, when you break that down, if you don't leverage a property and you're promising 20%, you've got to perform really, really well. And they were buying A-class properties in New York City, which you're going to be buying, you know, I don't know the cap in New York City, but I can't imagine an A-class is trading much over like a 4.5, maybe a 5. So let's say they buy a 5 cap property. That means you're making 5% on your money. as a cash deal. Well, how do you get to the other 20% annualized? You got 15 more percent to make up.
Right.
So it's got to be a combination of they think they can raise rents by another, 10% a year or whatever that is. And then they think the market's going to still increase by another 10, 15% in order to get their investors their yield. And the reason why I wanted to bring that up is because I think there's a lot of really good syndicators out there. And then there's the others that just assume that the market is going to continue to do what it's doing and it's never going to stop. And that's where people get in trouble. And that's where this company, it's like, boy, I mean, you guys might be right. Maybe you can achieve this, but one time the merry-go-round is going to stop and you're going to be left and you're going to be hemorrhaging in the end, right? They're going to lose. You're going to lose all your investors' money and everybody's going to be pissed off and suing you. If you're promising these big returns, or not promising, but telling people you're going to get these big returns,
yeah.
You're just, all these people are doing on that, in that syndication to me, is they're hedging everything on an unrealistic appreciation in the market. So when you underwrite, you got to underwrite conservative, whether you're an investor, whether you're looking at just investing privately into a deal, whatever. That would be my number one thing for sure. Yeah. And that's what we do. When we looked at this deal, market rate rents are increasing about 3%. In our underwriting, we were underwriting at about 1% increase. Current cap rate in that area is 7%. We're underwriting our exit at 8.25%. So we're always underwriting what much more conservatively than what the market is. I'm always assuming the market's going to go sideways. And that, that is always going to help you in the end. The market doesn't go sideways. If it continues to grow, you look really smart. But if the market does go sideways, at least you don't look like a dummy, right? You look like, okay, this investment didn't do quite as good as we want. Maybe it only made, 10%. We thought it was going to make 15, but at least it didn't make negative 10% or negative 5%. That's where you get yourself in trouble.
When you're talking to your investors, do you give them a couple different scenarios, A, B, and C?
I give them two scenarios, and both scenarios are really conservative. So I give them my target model, and then I give them a conservative model. And I always tell them, base your decision on the conservative model. If you're not okay with the returns on the conservative model, I don't want you to do the deal. And like when you look at the Lexington deal, the conservative model, we could be at, I think it's like 68% occupancy, and that's our break-even point. So we're being really conservative with where we think we can be at. And that's with almost no growth, and there should be growth. But you want to be conservative. You want to make sure that your P's and Q's are in order. So,
yeah.
So that's enough about me. I want to hear what you got going on. It sounds like you got a rental turnover. Tell us a little bit about that.
Kind of a much smaller example, but this is a local property that I own. Four-unit building, and we've had a really great tenant in there for about 4 years or so. She actually started in one unit and then switched over to a different unit because that was better for her. And so, she gave me her notice that she was moving on. Her family was growing. So it was interesting finding a new tenant. For a while, we were pursuing somebody that she had referred, but it took a while to get all the proper documents from them, and eventually they backed out themselves. So I was kind of thankful that one didn't work out. But I did find a new tenant, and so the old tenant gave me their keys back today. New tenant's moving in tomorrow, and the rent's going up $75 a month. So that's great.
So, and I think a couple things to point out is it's December. moving. Yep. And so that's a very challenging time. So congratulations, by the way, being able to raise the rent $75 in December, or for December 1st, because that's the probably the hardest time to rent is December 1st and January 1st.
January 1st, yep.
And nobody wants to move during those times because it's holiday season. Who wants to move? Yep. You know, you're trying to put your Christmas tree up, or you're taking your Christmas tree down, or, you know, you've had whatever, all these things going on. And it's just, so congratulations on being able to raise $75 and not missing a beat with your occupancy. That's fantastic as well for this time of the year. And we live in Minnesota, so it's a cold time here and nobody wants to move in the cold. So how did you find that new tenant? What'd you do? Did you advertise in Craigslist, Facebook? What'd you do?
I did put it on Craigslist and I put it in Zillow, and from Zillow, you know, it goes out to all those other websites.
Yep.
Did share it on Facebook, but you know, I'd have to go back and look to see exactly which feed this lead came from.
Okay.
But I think it was ultimately through Zillow. I was kind of surprised how little response I got through Craigslist, because that used to be very popular. Yeah. And I think I only got like maybe 2 responses on Craigslist and probably 24 through the other sites.
What kind of area is it in? Is it in A class, B class, C class?
I would say
F class,
maybe B minus or so.
Okay.
So South Minneapolis.
Sure. So it seems like what I've found is that, you know, Craigslist is a good tool. I do like it, and I always post there. But it seems to me like in our market, Zillow gets a better response if you're in like that B and A class.
Okay.
Yep. And I do both. I definitely advertise Craigslist all the time. That's always what we do. But so one thing I would point out, it's funny because you said your old tenant gave you a referral. And I always find that funny when old tenants give me a referral. It worked out well for you, and I don't know how you managed that. So maybe you can say that, but tell us. But when I would ever get a referral from a tenant for one of their friends or whatever, I never ever count on that happening, because it typically happens just like what sounds like what happened to you. It just doesn't work out. So how did you manage that? Were you still listing it at the time, or were you kind of assuming that they're actually the real deal?
You know, I gave them the benefit of the doubt, and I try to, you know, in Minnesota at least, the law is we need to process one application at a time.
Yep.
And so I try to, you know, follow that law. Not that you couldn't still advertise it, but yeah, I probably should have dropped the anchor, or whatever you might say, dropped her a lot sooner, because it took so long for them to get all the information. She was going to have a cosigner, and the cosigner was taking forever to get in their information. So.
No, this is not legal advice. So ask your attorney about this advice. But I believe if she didn't fill out the entire application 100%, you could accept another application at that time. Now, that might depend on if you took her money or not. You might have to give her money back.
Right.
Or just not accept money until she has it completely filled out. But yeah, you could accept other tenants, I believe. If she doesn't have it 100% filled out. So,
yeah, you're right. In the end, you know, I'm really glad it worked out. I think it really speaks to the demand for rental properties in our area. Cause to be honest, so I started advertising it after I let her go, just a couple days before Thanksgiving, and I was headed out of town over the Thanksgiving holiday. So I ended up showing it, you know, a few different times before I left town, and I got an application just pretty much the day I was leaving or the day before, processed it while I was gone, and then signed the lease when I got back.
Great.
So,
yeah, that's awesome. It's nice to be on a hot market. It definitely is for rentals. I mean, back in 2009, 10, 11, it wasn't quite like that. And so Times have definitely gotten much better.
So, yeah, now I just got to get the turnover done. I got a cleaner in there right now. Got a painter coming tomorrow morning. And, you know, since it's really close to where I live and I sometimes get a little get my hands a little dirty, you know, I'll do a few things there, just some minor stuff, blinds and screens and stuff like that. So, okay.
So are you getting in people before the tenant moves out, the tenant that's in there moves out, or had you started some of the turn before she moved out, or are you waiting until she completely moves?
I waited till she was out.
Okay.
And I did have to kind of push a little bit because she was like, we'll get done moving Thursday and then we'll come back to clean on Friday. I was like, well, Friday's the first. I really need you to get done cleaning, you know, Thursday. Yeah. So she, you know, a little bit of pushing, not too much. And she followed through. Okay. She did a pretty good job. You know, tenants, even your best tenant won't clean perfectly, but I think she did a decent job. And, you know, I just want to come back and make sure it's A+ so that the new tenant doesn't have any complaints.
Yeah. So one of the things I've implemented now into my leases is that all my tenants pay $150 cleaning fee upon move out. And it doesn't matter if they clean perfectly or not. And that's also subject to more violations if they don't actually clean. So we can actually charge them more, but it's just $150 cleaning fee. And, you know, I haven't noticed a change in their cleaning habits since I've implemented, because that was one of my first initial fears is if I implement this, does that mean they're just going to leave it messy and not clean?
Right.
But I have found that the majority of my tenants do leave it a little messy, and where I do have to still hire a cleaner to come in. And so I'm still paying $150, even though, you know, they did a decent job at it. We still have to do a really good job at it. Mm-hmm. So I haven't really noticed any difference in that. I'm still paying $150 for a cleaner to come in no matter what. Now I'm just getting it from the tenant 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. And those very few tenants that do an excellent job at cleaning, then I don't have to hire a cleaner in there and I still got the $150. So it's worked out really well. It's just kind of something that now the tenants don't fight about, because that was always a fee that if I would charge a tenant, they would always fight about it, you know, and especially if they're good tenants, you know, you get really good tenants that really took care of the place and they did a decent job cleaning, but you still have to hire a cleaner. You don't want to charge them a nickel and dime them because they were such good tenants. But now it's they understand it going into it and they're fine with it. And I never have any complaints. So that's definitely in a market like this, something you can add. I've heard of people doing move in fees and move out fees and all kinds of stuff. And I haven't implemented all that, but definitely stuff you can do to help your bottom line.
Yeah.
Well, cool. So what else is new? What kind of books are you reading this month?
I don't get through too many books, but I did just finish this one, Good to Great. I don't know, have you read this before?
I have not read it. I've listened to the audio of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, good. You know,
Is that Jim Collins?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I kind of read through it just because I had recognized the name. I've heard it before. And going through most of it, it didn't really feel like a lot of it applied to me because I'm just kind of a solo entrepreneur, not really this big company.
Yep.
But, you know, one of the last sections of the last chapter kind of brought it all together. Just talked about why you want to be great. And let me just take my notes here. So because somebody asked the author, what if I just want to be successful? What if, you know, being good is good enough for that guy?
Yeah.
So kind of after considering that question, they said, you know, if you're great, you can radically simplify your life, because being great, you're going to be beyond good at what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're also going to have kind of like, another popular book is The E-Myth, you know, I think it talks about that a lot. I actually haven't read it, but I've heard so much about it.
Yep.
Just when you have things, you know, everybody's got their responsibility in your company, and everybody has their specialty and that type of stuff. So it can increase your effectiveness.
Sure.
When you're great at what you're doing. And then also, if you love what you're doing, then you really shouldn't be able to imagine being less than great. So some kind of takeaways that I had after reading that book. So
yeah, and I think that's fantastic, because if you just go out to achieve being good and you just do everything just good, you're just going to be okay in your marriage. You're just going to be okay with your health. You're just going to be okay with your financial success. You're just going to be okay with your relationships. But if you go out and try to be great and even beyond great, if you try to be extraordinary, then you're going to have great results, right? You're going to have a great marriage. You're going to have great health. You're going to have great financial success. Everything in your life is going to be great. And I think that's what we all want to achieve. So
yeah,
I think that's great. It's funny that you mentioned that's the book I'm reading.
Okay.
The E-Myth by Michael Gerber. And I love it because he simplifies things, and I would challenge anybody that hasn't read it to read it. So I think that's your homework for next month, John, is to read that book. You know, he talks a lot about the franchise model in this book, and he talks really a lot about how they make it so you don't just own the pie shop, right? You own hundreds of pie shops, or you're franchising it so there's hundreds of pie shops. You aren't just affecting 20 people, you're affecting, you know, 2,000 people. And that's kind of been my goal recently. Is I don't want to go out there and, you know, positively influence 50 people or maybe even 100 people. I want to positively influence thousands of people or even millions of people, you know. And I think that's, if you want to do that in business and you want to be great at your business, then you're going to see great results doing that. And so that's how he talks. Stop thinking small. Stop yeah. thinking about it's not just about you. If you want to achieve great things, it's about everybody. It's about the larger, the bigger picture. And it's funny because after you read that book, you're going, wow, I mean, if I'm just building a business as a solopreneur and I'm just building that one pie shop, that one auto mechanic store, I'm kind of being selfish with the gifts that I have. But if I go out and I build hundreds or thousands of them, now I'm spreading that joy to everybody else, right? I'm spreading if I've got a great, you know, auto mechanic store, I'm giving that service, that awesome service, to thousands and thousands or millions of people versus 500, you know, so why not? So I love the book, and I love that mindset. So
yeah, you know, when you have that mindset of doing great work, not only is that going to benefit you, but like you're pointing out, it benefits other people. Yeah. And you know, that's has a lot to do with why we're here on Earth. It's not just for our own selfish ambitions.
Yep.
We're here to make a difference and do good. So
yeah, absolutely. Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate the time. I think we'll wrap it up from there, unless you got anything else special you want to say.
Yeah, that's good. Well, I just appreciate you having me on, and hope to see everybody out there in a closing sometime soon.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Have a good rest of the day, and we will talk to you next week, John.
All right. See ya.
All right. Want to learn more about real estate investing? Tune in to the best real estate investing advice ever with Joe Fairless. Joe has the longest daily running podcast on iTunes, well over 1,000 episodes. You can listen to me on Joe's podcast, episode 1015, where Joe interviews me and asks me about my best real estate investing advice. Joe has interviewed fantastic guests such as Emmett Smith, Robert Kiyosaki, Barbara Corcoran, all kinds of fantastic guests. make sure that you go on to Joe's podcast, subscribe, give him a 5-star rating and review. You do not want to miss out on a fantastic podcast, the best real estate investing advice ever with Joe Fairless.